Hey, you're listening to the Smoked Meat Podcast. I'm your host, Brad Pittman. Sorry it's been a while, but I've been taking a little break here and there. And now we're getting back to business. Today I'm starting back off with a great guest. I've got Mr. Randy Edelman. He has scored some of your favorite movies. I know I was watching one of them last night, Down Periscope. I love that movie. I love the music. And he's got a new single out now, and we're going to let you tell him about it. So we're going to go on ahead and get this beast kicked off here with Randy Edelman. Hey, so how are you today, Randy?
I'm good.
Outstanding, man. I've been looking forward to this. You have scored some of the movies that I've grown up with that I've loved.
And that was something I never planned to do, but it was that's what eventually happened after doing lots of other musical things for years.
Yeah. Yeah, and for me, you know, music is it's healing, you know. Music hits everybody in the same spot in their soul, you know. I love it because it's universal. It doesn't matter what language you speak, what you believe. A good tune
That's
is
it.
A good tune.
Yeah. Well.
So yeah. So what got you cranked up, man? What got you started doing this?
Oh, I've been doing it since I've been a kid.
Yeah.
I mean, I studied piano when I was very young, 5-6 years old, and then I studied classical music. I come from a family that there's nobody in it who, you know, has any relationship to, you know, the music business or show business or anything like that. So I kind of grew up in this very straight situation in New Jersey, but I always loved it. I kind of kept it a secret because when I grew up, the only thing that was happening was not music. It was sports, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So you wanted to be on the team and with the other kids. So I did it seriously, but kind of kept it quiet for a long time. I mean, close friends of mine knew about it. But I kind of wanted to be like everybody else. I didn't want to kind of stand out. But I try to make these things concise. Though I was studying, you know, serious classical music, I always loved pop music, and I would listen on the radio, and I would like show music. So I liked all kinds of music, even though I was basically doing that. And eventually, when I got out of school, kind of a serious music conservatory, not close to you, but I'd say down south, being Cincinnati, Ohio, and you'll say, that's not down south, but it was because I'm from like northern New Jersey, and it was just a whole odd thing that I went out there in the first place. Much too long a story for us to get into. But I was exposed to people from the south. Mm-hmm. I'd never met anybody from the south, because people from the south who were real serious opera singers or pianists, a lot of them went to the Cincinnati Conservatory.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, and that's where a strange situation led me to meeting at the age of 16 someone you'd say, what the fuck, you know, James Brown, and I started working as his arranger.
James Brown was such an awesome guy. You know, it's sad a lot of people just remember his later years when he got into trouble, but...
Well, he may have been in trouble, but it didn't, you know, it was an odd situation where he was signed evidently years ago somewhere down south, I guess, by a company called King Records.
Yeah.
And King Records was in Cincinnati, and they had a little studio literally in a garbage dump. Mm-hmm. And I was bringing kids from the school there to play on a couple of these, like, really, believe me, funky, very kind of beginner's records that I was involved in. Because he was there one day and sees this kid conducting an orchestra and blah, blah, blah. So that kind of led me, by the time I got out of school, I had done a lot of stuff in recording studio and pop stuff. And so my mind was, I had more things on my mind than just classical music, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and you know the neat thing about James Brown, if I met him one time, you know, I was in Augusta, and you know that's where he was from, and I saw him and his entourage coming out, I think the King George Pub or somewhere like that, and I just took a chance. I walked up and said, "Hey, Mr. Brown, I'm a big fan, and my name's Brad Pittman," and he shook my hand, and he was a little bit hard to understand, but I mean that just the way that is. But the neat thing about it is, every time he ever saw me there, he would go out of his way to come up and say, "Brad Pittman, how you doing?" and shake my hand again. Good. And that was so awesome.
So anyway, that's just a little twist that I gave you to take you after, instead of a long-winded explanation, to take you from me playing the piano at the age of 5 to, you know, jumping ahead like 15 years. You know, so that when I got out of this school, I had done a lot of different things and, you know, went pounding the pavement, so to speak, in New York for a very kind of short time. Because I did a lot of different things and blah, blah, blah. So what do you want to know?
Oh, man. Oh, there's so much. You know, like I said, I don't do a normal interview. It's starting out like one, but I kind of do that just to get things out of the way a lot of times. And there's no telling where this thing will go. I've spoken to someone about their Grammy and turned around and talked to Bigfoot, or talked about Bigfoot, you know. So it just kind of rolls everywhere.
So let it roll anywhere you want to go.
Cool. Well, you know, and by the way, since I found out that we were doing this interview, the theme song from MacGyver has been just bouncing in my head, looping. It's driving me insane now.
You know, that's what we call an oldie but a goodie.
Yeah, definitely.
That thing just keeps going. As you know, Quincy Jones once said, music is the gift that keeps giving.
Yeah.
But in order for it to keep giving, something has to happen with a certain piece of music, you know, because if it's sitting in a drawer, it's going to sit in the drawer, you know.
Yeah.
So, but no, MacGyver, that's a whole, I could do 3 hours of MacGyver. MacGyver was a series that eventually, after writing songs and making my old albums for years and doing a little bit of composing for films and television, but that wasn't my focal point, because in the after I got out of school, there was a period of time when the music business completely changed, in that, or I should say, the record business, because the record business used to be, you know, there'd be a music publisher who took a song to a record producer at a record label who took the song to an artist they were producing. Then that all went out the window when people started, the people selling 99.9% of the records were singing, producing, and writing their own music. It didn't matter if it was Bob Dylan or the Beatles or the Eagles or Elton John or Carole King. So the music business changed. So what the reason I'm telling you this is, if you had any inkling that you, of writing songs after I got out of school, and I really didn't, except I kind of saw that was an area that I could get into, you had to record your own songs, because the people selling all the records, most of them were recorded, they did their own music. So there was a period of time where if you could write a melody and carry a tune, you could get a damn record deal. Now that's putting it maybe over the top, but that's what you had to do. So that's how I got into that, you know, by, you know, signing like a record deal, just signing my name to like a, you know, like a 10-year form contract. And then so for years I did that. But gradually, after a lot of people recorded my songs, like Barry Manilow with Rika in New England, and Patti LaBelle and Dionne Warwick and Olivia Newton-John, lots of people did the songs, I started doing other things. And one of the first things I did was some TV stuff, one of which was a horrible show that everybody hated called MacGyver. And the pilot was so bad, it was when they did those things, it was that kind of thing. It was a 2-hour TV movie. At that time, they did these 90-minute or two-hour movies. And that was the pilot for a series But it was so bad that they cut it from 2 hours to 1 hour. Now, that may not sound like a lot to you. You got to understand, that's never been heard of. They'll take a minute out of something, or 3 minutes, or two scenes. But to cut something in half,
yeah,
that just shows that they didn't really believe in it. But anyway, they showed it to the network, as they did in those days. And they liked the guy, Richard, my friend, Richard Dean Anderson. Mm-hmm. And they liked him, and they picked the show up, and blah, blah, blah. That was the beginning of MacGyver. And I had written the theme in the pilot when he kind of jumped off a cliff or something, and then a parachute opened. Mm-hmm. And never had any idea that not only would the pilot be picked up, but it would run, you know, for a million years and then run in Europe. But I quit after the first couple of shows, but I wrote the theme. Mm-hmm. That's always there. So that was.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny doing this kind of stuff. You get it because you do it and you're obviously extremely good at it. But people don't understand the difference that the right music and the right sounds can make in a movie or a TV show. You know, it can make it or break it. Because I've seen some videos where it had, you know, different scenes without any kind of music to them. And you're just sitting there like, what the hell is this? And then you put the music back with it, and okay, I like this now. And people just don't get it. It's just something you kind of take for granted. And I love it. Let me see here. It's an off day. You know, you're my first person I've interviewed in about 3 months. Yeah, we moved, bought a house with almost 12 acres of land, and I've been working hard out here trying to get everything fixed. So this is kind of taking a back seat. Now I'm so happy to be recording again. Most definitely. This is, if you ever want something good for your soul, buy a little bit of land and start working on it.
Okay, what I was saying at the end, if you got it.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is if you mention something like MacGyver,
yeah,
I will, or a movie, I don't care if it's Gettysburg or My Cousin Vinny or whatever, the Glass of whatever it is, or a song or an artist, I will always have a really a good story to tell you that I will try to make as short as I can.
Okay.
That's what I was saying. And then suddenly, somebody's name lit up on my phone that I haven't heard from in 20 years. But anyway, go ahead.
Okay. Another one you did. Me and my wife, we will turn on a movie or something at night just to go to sleep by. And one of our favorites is actually Down Periscope.
Yeah, that's, that is, you know, I'm glad you like it, but that's not one I will. I mean, it's fine. But there's nothing to discuss.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There are other movies that are funny like that, classics that I've done, and you could ask about a number of them. But yeah, that one, what can I say about it? It's just, you know, obviously, I'm glad you like it. I'm not putting it, and I'm glad you're working on. But yeah, I don't really. Is what am I going to say about that movie?
It was pretty straightforward.
Yeah, pretty straightforward. But you know, there are others. There are other very kind of nerdy, so we say, comedies, mm-hmm, that are kind of, you know, left field, but that one is just like a, you know,
yeah,
it's what it is.
Yeah. And I know you did The Mask.
Well, The Mask, that's something else. That was a great thing. A really talented guy named Jim Carrey, who I never heard of and didn't know who he was when I first they asked me to do that, and I said no. He was they were just releasing that Pet Detective movie of his. And my kid was about 4 or 5. And he when I mentioned something, he said, you have to do this movie. And I said, well, he said, there's this guy on. And he was 4 or 5. He used to watch a show on TV called In Living Color.
I love that show.
Okay. Well, my kid was watching it. And so I said, well, maybe before I say no to this, because it wasn't about the money. I never cared about the money. But they had a real low budget to do The Mask.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, let's go down and see this new movie. And it was that Pet Detective, Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. So we went down to see it, and of course I saw that this guy is brilliant, you know. He's a brilliant talent. And then the next day I said I'd do the movie, and then, you know, it was just great, because if my, the, see, I like doing stuff that's different. And even though the Mask would be under the genre of comedy, if you listen to the music that I wrote, it's not funny. It's actually quite dark, because that's what that was about. So there is some romantic, lighter stuff, but it was cool. This, when you put on that mask and the green face, it allowed me the opportunity to kind of musically stretch out, whereas something like I'll Bring You Back to Down Periscope, that doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much forward military music.
So
yeah.
The Mask, it was a very unique, original thing. And in the end, of course, it was a monster picture all over the world and still is. And so that was a great experience. But because of, you know, it always comes down to, in these films, the characters and the people playing the characters and the storyline. And if that is, if that is not unique and original in some way, it doesn't matter if the movie is that great or if it's a wonderful drama. It's got to be something that's kind of a spark. And if that spark is there, then musically, you can kind of go with something because you're excited. You know, you're following a character or a personality or a really unique storyline. So that's an example of a picture that was great, you know, from something that I almost was going to not do, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, your list is just amazing. You know, you got Gettysburg, The Mask.
Well, I mean, Gettysburg was you'll get a kick out of this because it, oh well, that's where I was where was I? Yeah, in Atlanta. Uh-huh. With my buddy named Ted Turner.
Okay.
Now, they asked me to do that. I didn't want to do that either. And you'll say, why? Because now, by the way, this is after years of me doing lots of stuff and only breaking into film scoring when I was, when I say older. I wasn't older, but I wasn't a kid because I had done 20 years of all kinds of stuff. So when I started finally scoring big, you know, Hollywood movies, and I got a call about this movie. It wasn't a movie. It was going to be something called a miniseries, which I don't even know if I had heard of, but I guess I had, for a new company. Now, a cable company. It was like, well, I don't want to do a movie for a new cable company called TNT.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I got a call about it. Also, it was like 14 hours long, and I would have to write a lot of music, and they had no budget. You may say, Jesus, Gettysburg's a big thing. It was Ted Turner's baby. But, you know, when things are made, for whatever they're made, they're budgeted. So it's budgeted for like a TV miniseries. Anyway, again, I'm not into that, but it was just going to be so much work. But I was interested in something. I was interested in this guy. This guy's name was Ted Turner. Mm-hmm. Ted Turner had lived on a cot for 20 years with everybody laughing at him because he was trying to start a news cable company 24 hours a day. Everybody thought he was nuts.
Yeah.
You know, no one really remembers. So I remember reading about this guy and also something about it being like an expert sailor, and he won the America's Cup. So what I'm saying is I was fascinated about this guy, and it turns out I said something like, you know what, let me meet with this guy and talk about it. Now, Ted Turner didn't know me from a hole in the wall.
Yeah.
Anyway, it turned out that I got to meet him because he was right literally around the corner from me that week. And I met him, and we ended up being pretty close. We and there was no way when I walked out of there with his Civil War enthusiasm and hearing about this book called Killer Angels, that's what Gettysburg is based on, being around all these years and his love of the Civil War in the South. It, no way was I going to walk out of there and say, I don't think I'm going to do this movie. You know, yeah. I had to do it.
Yeah.
And in the end, here's a story that you don't know, Brad. Mm-hmm. The reason that Ted Turner bought a company called New Line Cinema, that's now part of Warner Brothers, mm-hmm. was to release Gettysburg after he heard it with my music as a feature film that nobody would ever release because it wasn't really well done as far as a film goes.
Yeah.
And it was too long. So what does he do? He bought a company.
The man, Gettysburg. The man has style.
That's the truth. And now here's something that ties into it. We were just talking about this. Okay, this happened. I remember there was a premiere of Gettysburg. Walked into the bathroom, you know, take a piss or whatever. Mm-hmm. And who's standing next to me? Ted. And you know what happened when he bought New Line Cinema? They had a little picture that just came out. There was a monster hit. And you know what it was?
What was it? The mask.
And I said to him, hey, if it wasn't for me, for whatever I wrote for Gettysburg, you wouldn't have the hottest picture in the world right now. And he said, you know what? You're right. Because that's why he bought New Line to release Gettysburg as a, you know, 3.5 or 4 hour feature film. Anyway.
That is awesome.
See, I just tied those two things up for you. Anyway, that's the, the Gettysburg was great. And, you know, everything is different. And at the time, I had done, I won't tell you, I was like the comedy king in Hollywood. Every time I did a comedy, it would be a big hit. Mm-hmm. I did all the Schwarzenegger things, Twins, Kindergarten Cop, Ghostbusters 2, My Cousin Vinny, Adam Sandler's films. So I was wanting, because I wasn't a funny guy really, mm-hmm. to kind of do what I wanted to do, which is write, quote, more serious music. Yeah. So Gettysburg is one, and Gettysburg led directly to Michael Mann and Last of the Mohegans. Mm-hmm. And that's how I kind of changed the vibe of what I was doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you had to say one was your favorite, one movie or TV show, any of them.
No, I can't.
Can't
I
do it.
Can say that.
I understand fully.
They're all different. And maybe one that was my favorite. I mean, my favorite what? The way the movie came out or the work I did on it. There's all different things. And fortunately, I had a lot of, and still am having, a lot of really good experiences. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it doesn't matter if the movie is a big studio blockbuster kind of film or a little independent film that probably you're never going to hear about. As long as I creatively could get into it, they're all the same. Now, sometimes you have, instead of 2 months, you have 2 weeks. That changes things. But yeah. I just try to do all of them like treat them separately and one at a time. But it's, yeah, I mean, people ask me that, but I just don't have, one. There's, I don't know if you know who Rob Cohn is, but he's a, yeah. He did the original Fast and Furious. I didn't do that with him, but I've done lots of films with him. One was called Dragon Heart. One was called Triple X. The Bruce Lee story, Dragon.
I watched that about a week ago.
Huh?
I watched that about a week ago.
Dragon, the Bruce Lee story?
I did.
Yeah, and you hear the music in that?
Yeah.
That was one that the music was able, you don't know this going in. The score that I did transformed it into something other than just a kind of straight biopic. Now, did I do that with that in mind? Of course not. I wrote whatever I wanted to, but in the end, that music has gone on and it's used for a million. Sometimes people see that and you say, I've heard that music before. No, that's the first time it was written for that. But it's been used for everything from the Super Bowl to the Olympics to the Wimbledon. I mean, it's used a lot. Yeah. But that was, things like that that work, because what happens is you are presented with something, baby, and the outcome is something that's much greater than what you thought or you had in mind when they first said, you know, do you want to do a biopic about Bruce Lee? Bruce Lee was great, but I wasn't particularly knowledgeable about Bruce Lee or into any of those martial arts films. And from that one, I did a ton of Asian-oriented, all the Jackie Chan, Shanghai Noon, Shanghai Nights, The Quest with Van Damme. I did lots of, kind of things that were Eastern or Asian, just from that one experience. So you never know what these things are going to lead to.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, your answer to that question about your favorite one makes me feel really good, because it shows you love what you do. And I'm a comedian. I'll get on stage, and people ask me, you know, if I have a favorite place or a favorite type of crowd, and I really don't, because I understand what you're saying. Everywhere, I'm getting to make somebody smile. And that's the whole thing for it.
That's it, yeah.
And I can definitely respect that answer. And
yeah, I'm not trying, like I said, because if I tried to answer it or made it easier, said, oh, you know, very easy, I could pick one and talk about it, I would be bullshitting you, because it's not the truth. I don't have not only one favorite. If you asked me to name six out of the over 100 films I've done, I couldn't. I could name, if you said, what was a great experience, I could go on about, let's say, at least a dozen of them.
Yeah.
But each one is different. I did a film about a snake. Another one. A lot of these, they're ones that originally, when hearing about it, why would you? It was called Anaconda. Mm-hmm. It turned out to be a big hit. The director was from Peru, Luis Losa, and we didn't really get each other that much. But it turned out to be a wild thing, you know, and a fun thing. It was a big hit, but, you know, about a snake.
Yeah. Yeah. And this morning I actually listened to the new single, Coming Out the Other Side.
Yeah,
that was amazing.
You heard, it was it wasn't the piano thing, it was the record, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because now you have to understand, I'm glad you mentioned it. Now, that's really why we're talking. But putting other stuff aside, so I used to write songs to do albums, but then I got into film scoring, and I had no interest, and it wasn't my job when you do a film is to help the director make various scenes work through your music, but nobody wants to hear a song. So it was years since I was into writing songs at all, because I didn't really have interest and I didn't have time. But during this whole last year, I did lots of stuff, and one of them was writing this kind of fun tune about when we're going to all get out of our houses. And I did it, and I recorded the whole thing, Brad, in my backyard.
Nice.
I'm playing everything. There's nothing on that I'm not playing. So I had a blast doing it, and I didn't really know if I was ever going to play it for anybody, but I did. And so this is, you know, we're having a blast. I was just in New York doing some promo, and I met Eileen, who was a kick. Oh, you know her?
I love Eileen. She is so amazing.
I've been in this business a long time. I mean, business being the general music business, not just the film business or the record business. And she's a blast. So we're into this. I don't know what will happen, but everybody loves this little record that I made. And for me, when I wrote songs, if you know, whether it's Weekend in New England, or they were kind of more ballady, kind of serious, romantic things. So this is just a fun little romp. I'm glad you listened to it, because that's what it is. And as soon as I got done with it, I played it for a couple of people. Everybody said, okay, let's put it out, you know.
Yeah.
So that's it, yeah.
Yeah. I'm assuming that you have distribution rights to it, because it's your song.
I don't know. Somebody has – it's all mine. It's me. I produced it, wrote it, blah, blah, blah. But no, someone in New York, a company called, that Eileen is involved with. She's Tribeca. They're okay. The ones who are distributing it.
Oh, man, I was going to ask if I could put it on the end of the show, but if I got to get the
of
rights.
Of course, what do you mean? Well, that has nothing to do with, of course you can.
Oh, man, because I want everybody to hear it. Outstanding.
Hold it. Listen, Brad.
Yep.
I'm the writer, performer, 100% publisher. You play that damn song at the end of your show.
I will do it because everybody needs to hear it.
Think about it. Of course, but you can. It's not like I'm doing something. We're doing something. No, you can play it. Look on. It's already on Spotify and YouTube and everything.
Yep. Yep. As a matter of fact, I listened to it on Spotify. But yeah, you know, I've charted in 10 countries, so one or two people might hear it. So.
Well, yeah, you see, actually, when I first played it for some people, they said, it sort of sounds like a little bit of country. I said, well, I don't know what it's about, but I did it in my thing there. See, it's interesting. I tried, because they just had called me, was it yesterday or something, mm-hmm. and said, oh, it's on the stuff. When I tried to play it on Spotify.
Yeah.
It would, I couldn't play it. It would play, when I hit it, it would play one of 50,000 of my film scores that were below it. But so you actually played it.
Yeah, that's right.
Pressed it.
I tried Spotify and it did that. It was YouTube I listened to it on.
Okay, right. Yeah. Right, I couldn't, even though it showed, first of all, I'm not that great at all this technical stuff, but I pressed it on Spotify. It was right on there first, and I heard every, well, I didn't listen, but you know, they play Gettysburg, or they play While You Were Sleeping, or they play, you know. So finally I went to YouTube. That's where I heard it. But
yeah,
I don't know what's wrong. I'll have to let them know that maybe I'm doing something wrong. I don't know.
If you are, I am, because that's the same thing I wound up doing. I went to YouTube.
Okay, well, make sure that it's that song and that version, because there's another version that I did for Eileen that's a slow version, but play it. Promise me you'll do it.
I promise you I will.
Promise at the end of the show. And obviously, that's diametrically opposed to all this film score music we're talking about, but it's completely part of what I've done over my musical life. It's just that I haven't done it in a while, but I'm back into it. So I'm going to do a whole album.
Outstanding.
You know, of this stuff.
Man, when you do, I will have you back on the show to promote this thing.
I'm going to be back, baby. And then I want some ribs or something. Oh, that you're going to cook me on that grill of yours, or your pigs.
You come to Atlanta, you are fed. That's all there is to it.
All right. I'll call you.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, we film a lot here right now. Matter of fact, they're filming MacGyver here.
Really?
Yeah.
The new one.
Yeah, the new one, yeah.
Yeah, the new one. Forget the new one, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
I only deal with Ricky Dean, with our old one. That, and that's on all the time now on one of those, you know, I mean, and in Europe. But I think the new one is over, the new one.
I think it is.
Yeah.
But, yeah, what's funny about the old one is I was a young teenager when it came out, and we got into so much trouble over that show because the stuff he did, most of it worked. Me and my friends made an ampho bomb and just blew a big hole in the ground just to see if it worked, and it did.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that was – it was if I could – and you know what the thing is, the word to get least out of here, that show, when it started, it never got high ratings.
Yeah.
And it was always like, well, are they going to pick it up? And out here it was on after Monday Night Football or before it. It was at an odd time that you didn't know when it was on. It was always a question. And they just kept picking it up year after year and playing that theme of mine and blasting it. So it was a great thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just happy that I'm getting to talk to somebody that loves what they do and they're good at it. And, you know, I'm with you. Money isn't everything.
No, it's never, you know what? It's never been about that. That's great, but it's been about me. Here's what it's been about, and then we'll end this with this. Mm-hmm. It's been about me since I was a kid trying to figure out, can I sit behind the piano? I didn't know anything about making records, writing songs, of doing film scores. Of I was a musician, and I really got my chops together being a very multifaceted musician, which allowed me, when these circumstances presented themselves, to do something. But the whole thing, Brad, was, can I figure out a way my whole life to never get a job, even though I've worked my ass off, to be just sitting behind the piano writing music? And I did it.
Outstanding.
It wasn't about the money. It was about, can I get by, and that's my gig. I had no idea what I was going to do. Obviously, it turned out fantastically. But that was the and because I loved composing and coming up with original music, I never played in a group. I'm just a lonely soul guy sitting by behind a piano, and I'm still there. Even though I've done all this stuff all over the world, I'm still sitting there.
Outstanding. Well, you know, the people ask me all the time how much money I make off this podcast, and I tell them I don't make a nickel. I've never monetized it. I've had one or two sponsors if I needed a little help along the way, but for me, it just feels like it would turn it into a business, and I wouldn't enjoy it as much.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I do everything with it. Eileen and Jimmy help me with my guests, and they are so awesome. But I'm a paramedic full time, and this is my therapy. This is what helps me wash away that day. So.
Oh, great! Well, that's the best thing you can do, being a paramedic. That's great. So look, it's been great talking to you. Play that record, Brad.
I'm going to, as soon as we get off here. I'm putting it on.
Send it to, yeah. You better play that thing at the end of whatever you're doing.
I will definitely do it, Randy. Thank you so much. And you call anytime, my friend.
You're more than welcome. Sorry about what happened. That was so weird. In the middle, it's just you disappeared. And I saw this strange name light up that I hadn't seen in 15 years. But it's okay.
Hey, we can fix it. You take care, my friend.
All right. You too. Stay well.
You too.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Okay, everybody. And as I promised, here is Randy Edelman doing Coming Out the Other Side. Y'all enjoy. Y'all download it. Let's make this thing huge here on the Smoke Meat Podcast.
You wake up with a smile on your face, 'cause today you can run from your place. You've been locked in your house all year long, but today you begin a new song. You've been pushed from your purpose in life, and been scared by the edge of a knife. Now it's time to fight back and break out. Time to see what this life's all about. And just take a good look all around you. Let your heart be filled with pride. Grab your coat and take your belongings. You're coming out the side. There's a new kind of spring in your step, and a fresh attitude you've got ahead. And a new spirit's filling your space, and a confidence that's your new base. So just take a good look all around you, and let your heart fill up with pride. Grab your hat, put your best suit on. You're coming out the other side. You can look at the scene around. cause there's more in your tank you can give. There's a friend who needs help over there, so extend your good arm, show you care, and just take a good look. Your heart.